This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In this hour, we're going to be talking about suicide. Pat Mashburn, author of Just Breathe, Surviving a Loss to Suicide, talks about the surviving family and friends. And also joining us is Camille Ralston, who is the mother of someone who took their life just 6 months ago, and she will share with us, her story about having to deal with that loss. So, Camille, welcome to the show, and Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Noel. It's an honor.
Thank you. I'm glad to be a part of this.
Thank you, Camille. So, Pat, let's start with you first. The genesis of the book. You know, what brought you to write this book? What had you thinking about this? It's oftentimes we always just question the why of the person who has taken their life, but not really what's going on with the healing process of the survivor.
You know, we hear so much about warning signs and awareness immediately following a suicide, which we should, because we need to remain educated and aware of the latest signs, but very rarely do we ever hear anything about the survivor, the person who's left to grieve the loss for the rest of their lives, because, you know, there's just, as you said earlier when we were talking, there are so many whys surrounding it that never get answered.
And so when you thought about writing this book, you have worked with families in counseling centers and so forth?
Well, my experience was that for 5 years in St. Tammany Parish, I was a volunteer crisis responder with law enforcement in the coroner's office. And whenever there was a suicide, I was called to the scene to provide crisis intervention for the family and the friends left behind. And I also co-facilitated support groups for three of those 5 years. And I saw a side of the suicide issue that rarely ever gets talked about. I mean, there's so many myths and misconceptions. And when we hear about a suicide, there's that rush to get an explanation so that we can pack it up and move on. But it's just, for the survivor, it's just not possible. And now, so I wanted to write this book to help educate and also let the survivors know that there's somebody that understands what they're going through.
Now, in this country, suicide has been referred to as a significant or major national public health issue. I think somewhere around 48,000 suicides annually.
Well, I can break it down for you, too. It's in the United States, about 122 people per day die by suicide, which is just over 44,000 a year. Now, anywhere from an estimated 8 to 10 people are affected by each suicide. So that's 968 new survivors a day, or just over 355,000 a year. So it's a growing population that needs help.
Would it be fair to say that that's a public health issue as well, and a major public health issue as it relates to, the survivor and how they're dealing with their grief and their loss? And whether or not there are trickle down effects of that as well?
Yeah, yes. As a matter of fact, family members are often at very high risk immediately following a suicide. They're bombarded on three different levels: philosophical, psychological, and physiological. So any coping skills you had are out the window. And then in a few moments, if you're at the scene, you might have the unpleasant task of talking to a detective or a coroner's investigator and being asked questions that you never in your life thought that you would have, that you would be asked.
Camille, I know this is all this for you. This incident happened just 6 months ago, and I'm sure it's all just very fresh right there in front of you. How have you gone through this grieving process and have dealt with this loss in your life?
Well, it's been very, very difficult. My son, beautiful boy, 21 years old, took his life in Seattle, Washington. He moved there at the end of January, and he died on March the 25th of this year. William had been depressed for about 10 years now. He tried all the medications. In fact, when he was in Seattle, he tried the new drug ketamine. I don't know if anyone's familiar with that, but he tried that. It was not successful. And at that point, he decided to give up. It's been extremely difficult. The first month, I could not leave my apartment. But what I've been doing now, I've been going to church, which is really helping. But most of all, it's the reading, it's the groups, and it's the talking very openly about my son. If I meet anybody that asks me about my children, I will mention William, how he died, why he died, because of depression. And I have not had one person that was nothing but kind and compassionate. I'm having a hard time, but I just recommend to anyone out there who has lost a family member, a friend to suicide, talk about it, read about it, get yourself involved in groups. The day William died, within 5 hours, I had some friends come by, and also a lady named Karen came by. She was with a group called SOS, Survivor of Suicide, and she gave me information, told me about the groups, and it was only because she stopped by that day that within 6 weeks, I started attending that group. I attend the group in Mandeville, and I attend the one in the NAMI building in New Orleans. They are wonderful because you get to talk and be around other people who are going through exactly, well, not exactly what you're going through, but you understand their emotions.
Yeah. Camille, we're going to talk more about that. We got to get to a break, and we'll be right back. We're talking to Pat Mashburn, author of Just Breathe, Surviving a Loss to Suicide, and Camille Ralston, who is so very nice to share with us her experience in the loss of her son just recently. We'll be right back. We're back, and we're talking about the national public health issue in the United States of suicide. Pat Mashburn, author of Just Breathe, Surviving a Loss to Suicide, and Camille Ralston, who is the survivor of suicide, losing her son just less than 6 months ago. And Camille, I must say that you are an incredibly brave woman to join us today, and we really appreciate your willingness to share your story. I know that grieving is really hard work, and it has to be difficult. But I was curious, how did you and Pat end up meeting?
Well, this was a fortunate thing. The day that William left us, my very, very dear friend showed up with this book by Pat Mashburn. I read the book, and I sent it to someone, and I can't remember who. At that point, I couldn't remember how I had gotten the book. Well, my friend had called, and we were talking, and she had asked me if I had read the book, and I said, Maureen, are you the one that gave me that book? She said, yes. I said, it is wonderful. I need to get another one. And she said, well, you need, you know, Pat Mashburn works in the area. You need to go meet him. So I went by where Pat worked, met him, and we've been friends ever since. And I bought several books and have sent them to family members and friends for anyone who is having any, you know, being a survivor or having a child, a spouse, or a friend depressed, thinking about suicide. The book is wonderful. So the only reason I got this book was because a friend of mine dropped it off, and I think she had met Pat, and Pat had given a book to her.
Camille, in your case, just curiosity strikes me. You had been dealing with an issue with your son as it relates to depression. So, you know, the suicide itself is the what, and I think a lot of people are always working around the question of the why. In your case, though, you knew what the trials and tribulations that he was going through?
Oh, yes. William had been depressed for about the past 10 years, started in high school, and he went to doctors, was on medication. The medication had terrible side effects. William was very bright, very sensitive. He had a lot of friends, but I think he just had trouble coping.
Yeah.
And it was just terribly, terribly sad. He wrote a beautiful, beautiful 4-page suicide note. In that note, he had said that he had been thinking about this for a long time. William did a lot of research, and these teenagers get on the internet and they find out the easiest, less messy way to do it. It is horrifying. I didn't know that until I read that in William's note. But he had been thinking about this. No, he'd been thinking about this. He'd probably been planning this. He was a real planner. He'd probably been planning this for years. In the note, he even said that he knew this is the way he would go out.
In your conversations with the support groups, I'm certain you have come across folks that don't have as much of a definitive why. Are the range of emotions different?
Very different. We're not going into detail about how William died, but he did it in a way that nobody had to see him. Well, I will tell you how he died. He died from, and I didn't even know of this, hydrogen sulfide inhalation. I had never, ever heard of it. It started in Japan. It's getting more and more popular. In the United States, you get household chemicals. You mix it with sulfur. You inhale it. Within 2 seconds, you're gone. William didn't do. He did it in an area where there was no one around. He even put up cones around him with a sign that warned the responders that there was hydrogen sulfide. He was a very considerate person.
He didn't want anybody else to suffer from any remnants of those substances.
Did not want anyone else to get hurt. Most people in these groups are people who have found their loved ones. I can't even imagine how much more difficult that would be if I had had to see William. And most of these are gunshots, hangings, and, you know, cutting. Awful, awful scenes. And this is what most people have in their minds. I did not have to do that. And it is terribly difficult for me. I can't even imagine what these people are going through who actually saw their loved one after they had taken their life. So the range of emotions, it's very, very difficult. But one of the reasons I love the groups is I'm there. I can help other people.
Yeah.
I get strength from that.
I can hear it in your voice. And in the manner in which you talk, and in so many different ways, and I can tell you, my heart is just getting tugged right out of my chest at the present time, quite frankly. And
yeah.
And when we come back, Camille, if you will allow me, I am going to share a personal story with you, and we'll talk this through as well. We have Pat Mashburn, author of Just Breathe: Surviving a Loss to Suicide. And Camille Ralston, a survivor of suicide. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back with Pat Matchburn, author of Just Breathe, Surviving a Loss to Suicide, and Camille Ralston, who is a survivor of suicide as well. And she has been just incredibly telling us her story. I guess, Camille, to a certain extent, your recovery in dealing and in grieving the loss of your son. And we were just, Pat and I were just talking off air that the statistical evidence that, you know, males commit suicide 3.5 times more than females is a striking statistic to me, Pat.
It is. And I think that, you know, as males, we derive our whole sense of being from our families, being the provider for everything. But then when it goes awry, you know, we lose our sense of being and we go into just like a total state of crisis. Sometimes we hide it because, you know, like, as you know, women are much more forthcoming with their feelings than men. So sometimes it's harder to see it in males than in women.
Yeah. And what is the other leading cause other than folks that are struggling with depression or some other mental disability? What is some of the other leading causes?
I would say at the top of the list, based on my experience in the field, breakups of relationships, whether it's adults or teens. You know, it's like, and I think a big part of that now is that with the increased focus on social media, everybody is just tied up with their sense of self being in social media. So it's sometimes they don't see a way that they can save face, or, you know, that the loss is of the relationship is just so great that they just don't know how to cope with it.
You know, we were also talking off air as well. The New York Police Department had their 8th officer commit suicide this year. They had 4 in the month of June alone. When you think that there's 30-some-odd thousand police officers on that force, that's a striking number as well.
It really is. And in fact, I think, you know, when I worked in the field, I saw things that law enforcement saw that most people don't realize, just the trauma of a traffic accident where somebody has died, whether there's a murder scene. They see things that the general public will never, ever see, so they can't understand the depth of or the huge degree of stress that law enforcement are under each day. I mean, each day that they put on the uniforms, they don't know if that's going to be their last day.
Yeah.
And this friend of mine, who's he and his wife told me the story that, like, when he comes home, she doesn't necessarily say hello. She just breathes a huge sigh of relief when he walks through the door. It's like, oh, I get to have him for one more day. And I think that can be attributed to the large degree of suicides in law enforcement.
Camille, do you find there are moments that as you deal with this, that you go through like an instant replay of life?
Well, I tell you, I keep busy. And like I said, these groups have helped me. I think William is always on my mind. But the only comfort in all of this is that my son is free. I compare it to William's body being on fire. There's water at the end of a pier. If he jumps in the water, he will die. But if he jumps in the water, the pain will end.
Yeah.
The whole thing is just so awful, but William is free. And if William were here today, he would be miserable.
You know, Camille, what you just described is the same way that I've dealt with the loss in my family. My biological father committed suicide when I was 10 months old. And I did not learn of his loss until I was 22. And it was that same difficult process that you go through. And you go through that instant replay of life all the time. And I never knew the man. So I feel for what you're going through, because I understand. And
wouldn't wish that on anybody. I'm just very, very sorry about your father.
No, I mean, I did not know. I wasn't old enough to know, but it's same thing. There's not a day go by, and I had a beautiful man who adopted me shortly thereafter, whom my mom married, and I wouldn't have traded it for anything in the world. And, you go through this appreciation process, and still when you talk about it 40-something years later, it still touches your heart.
Oh, there are people. There is a man in my group. His wife died 48 years ago, and he just started coming to group. It was a secret for 48 years to his children how their mother died. That is the worst thing you can do. I talk about William openly, and I'm telling you, everyone I talk to immediately tells me about a friend or someone they know who has committed suicide. It has to get out in the open. And there are people today whose children die, and they tell people that it was things other than suicide. That will hurt everybody in the end.
Yeah.
Suicide has to be out in the open. I'm not ashamed. I don't feel guilty. We did everything we could for William. He couldn't cope with this world. He was too good for this world. People understand that. I have a daughter, 3 years older than William. They were very, very close.
Yeah.
She's in Minneapolis. They were very different. William, how are you doing? Oh, Mom, I'm fine. Always fine. Emily would tell me everything about her feelings. It's much different with men. It really is.
Yeah. Camille, we got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back, and we're talking to Pat Mashburn, author of Just Breathe, Surviving a Loss to Suicide, and Camille Ralston, who has been so very kind to share her story with us with the loss of her son and the range of emotions that one goes through. And got a number of texts of folks texting in. Newell, my grandfather took his own life. I never knew him, but my father was 16 at the time, and the point is that it carries over to the next generations. I don't understand. I can't tell you, but it hurts for a lifetime, and I never met him. I don't understand why it carries over like it does. Any thoughts on that, Pat or Camille?
Well, I have a similar story. My earliest exposure to suicide was when I started my sophomore year at St. Paul's, and my roommate hadn't gotten there yet. But I saw his, they had a nameplate on his side of the room. His name was Donald Ferrado. Well, that evening when we met in the chapel, I thought it was just like an introductory meeting. But Brother Ray called us together to tell us that Donald had taken his life. And that was like in 1980. I never knew who he was, but I had all these questions. And people that knew him, I was always asking them. And even to this day, I wonder, I think about it. And so that was one of the reasons why I got involved. Now, I had no idea that it would take me to where I am now, but it was my desire. It was the stigma that prevented me from asking questions of survivors, but it was also the stigma that motivated me to go as deep as I did and to be able to write the book.
Camille, do you find that there's a thickness in the air when this subject comes up, and with people that you surround yourself with, that sometimes hard to overcome?
I have learned through something like this, you find out who your friends are. The people that don't understand, the people that don't want to talk about it, I want nothing to do with them. I've got such a wonderful support system. I come from a family. My father's father committed suicide. My father's grandfather committed suicide. My father's mother committed suicide. So I come from a family of a lot of generations who have committed suicide. So I've done a lot of research on it. I think William felt cursed. I really do. I don't feel cursed. William was extremely sensitive. And I think he thought, because his family, there was other suicide in the family, that he was cursed. And I think having family members that have done it does make a difference. But like I said, talking about it is what helps me more than anything. The reading, the talking, the not being ashamed, because I had no shame at all. And the people who are ashamed, that is their problem. I had a wonderful son who, like I said, could not cope in this world. And someone told me, he said, they said, you know what? William won the battle. He won the battle. I'll never forget a friend telling me that within a week after William died. William won the battle. I will always remember my son as winning the battle.
Absolutely. When you think about it, having faced the trials and tribulations of depression and trying everything and being able to survive as long as he did while under the treatment. And sometimes there are those that are more successful than others in doing so, but depending on the severity and the degree of it, Pat, you are winning the battle, and actually it's a daily battle.
It is. I mean, and for a survivor, you know, let me back up for a second. The title of the book came from the very first thing that I would say to people. You know, they would be, it's such a traumatic, overwhelming moment. They're thinking about all the decisions that they have to make. And the first thing I would tell them is, you don't have to do anything right now. The most important decision you can make at this moment is just to take your next breath. And then the one after that, and then the one after that. Because I realized that my purpose wasn't to make somebody feel better, because you can't. It was to be able to get them to move from one moment to the next, and then maybe they could focus on getting from one day to the next. So it's incremental for a lot of survivors.
You feel that way, Camille, about it?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You just, you know, a preacher one time, I went to a funeral, and the boy died, he said, you know, when people ask you how you're doing, just say you're making it.
Yeah.
I don't think fine is in my vocabulary anymore. When people ask how I'm doing it, I am making it. That's all I can do. Minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day. I've got good days. I've got bad days. But I've got so much support. And that's how I'm making it. Family, friends, books, groups, and church.
Yeah. You know, Camille, I don't know you, but I can hear it in your voice and the sincerity and everything else. And some of what you described, I totally understand, having experienced myself, sometimes the hateness in folks and trying to grapple with an issue that doesn't even really involve them. But I know in the end that there's so much that you have to give to others. And just sharing this experience. And I don't know, you know, how deep you had to dig to come on the show today, but I am appreciative of it. I can tell you, and it made it easier. I haven't shared my story with many folks.
Well, share it.
And if I had a regret, it would probably be that, because when I learned at 22, I saw the pain in my adoptive father's face. And I think that's what made it the most difficult.
It was hard for him and your mom to keep that secret. The secrets, that is what hurts. My dad was very, very open. I always knew
it was in the best interest of me. That I never had difficulty grappling with. So I was able to overcome whatever the emotions were at the time, solely knowing that they were always looking out for my best interest.
Yes.
And there's no doubt that your son felt the same about you.
Oh, yeah, I think he left here so he wouldn't do it anywhere where I was around. He was a unbelievably considerate man. He was just amazing. Heaven is lucky to have him.
Absolutely. We got to get to a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Unfortunately, time has slipped away. Camille, thank you so much for joining us today. And Pat, your final thoughts?
Yeah, Newell, this book wouldn't have been possible without the participation of law enforcement. Captain Michael Farrell, St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Department, thank you for your service. Deputy Bobby Carter in Tangipahoa Parish Sheriff's Department, we've known each other since first grade. Keep up the good work. Carl, Charlie, state troopers, thank you for your service.
And Camille, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. The emotion in the text that I'm receiving, everybody's thanking you for being so brave. We really appreciate
it. Well, I feel very honored to have been a part of this. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.